Here comes this thing.
Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores. It seems like forever since we've been here, and it's been maybe just over a week.
Oh, there's Labor Day.
Yeah. Yeah, we took a break on Labor Day.
Yeah.
Broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering day-to-day life, bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living.
We don't cover day-to-day life anymore.
We don't. No, that's right. That was edited out in the last edit. No longer covering day-to-day life. But
that's
today,
right.
We're covering day-to-day life without a car.
That's true. Okay, yeah, we're joined by David and Katie Proctor. Hello.
Hello. Hey.
That was you guys practiced.
We've been practicing for a decade.
Excellent. Both of you are from a carless household, and that is no small feat, so we'll talk about that and all the details. So, but before that, Aaron,
yes.
Number one, episode 200. Because this is what? Episode
199C.
Yes. Because technically, we've already gotten.
Technically, this would be like episode 202, maybe? Or 201. But we don't want that to happen until our live episode, which was scheduled for the 22nd.
That's right, yeah. So, due to the availability of the venue, that's what's going on. Anyways, episode 200. It's the first time we've ever done a live show of any kind, and it's rather exciting. I'm
scared
forward.
As hell.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. I guess I am too.
I mean, that's a type of excitement, I guess. But.
We all have the butterflies. we've got Joe Kermaski, Dan Christensen from TriMet. Well, he's not representing TriMet. He's representing himself.
But hey, he works for TriMet.
Yes.
But he's not there in a capacity representing TriMet.
Right. And then
and the opinions expressed by Dan Christensen
do not represent those.
Are not endorsed
of the taxpayer organization. Yes.
Right.
We also have Sarah Gilbert. And,
yes.
All three of them will be telling stories, and there may be a few more surprises yet. So that's happening September 22nd, 7 o'clock at VeloCult.
In the
Hollywood District of Portland, Oregon.
Have we confirmed Grilled by Bike?
Yes, we have, as a matter of fact.
Awesome.
So everybody remembers from the summer.
5:30.
The Grilled by Bike thing. It's bikes on fire. There's a
right
charcoal grill.
Mm-hmm.
So bring your grills. It'll be a bring your own question mark.
Bring your own grillables.
Bring your own protein.
Yeah.
Or not protein, or whatever you like to throw on a fire. Bring it in, and we're going to have that happening beforehand. So I think somewhere between 5:30 and 6, we'll start that up, and then 7 o'clock is showtime. So anyways, it's all very exciting. So that's happening. Number two, the Retort to Close Pass contest. We've been getting some good submissions. We'll summarize those next week, I think we decided.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got one call-in for that,
That's
too.
True. Yeah.
Although have you been able to identify who that was?
I have not.
Okay, caller.
I could do some reconnaissance. I never called
them
back.
Identify yourself, because you're in the running.
Right, right.
I need to know who I'm mailing stuff to.
True enough. Yeah, and if they like cardamom or not.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's true too.
Yeah. So there's that, and one more week. If you got what happens when someone passes you in an automobile too closely?
Says something rude, or too closely, or
what is your smart retort?
What do you say?
Yeah. We did Bike Scout. Bike Scout is
That's
the coolest
right.
thing that happens in Portland ever.
You
is
know,
that overstating
it's,
it?
Well, no. Yes, no. I don't know. I mean, I have
Katie,
a short
David,
memory
are you,
anyways.
Yeah, are you guys familiar with Bike Scout? You know
I'm
what it is?
Familiar, but we have not Bike Scouted ourselves.
Okay.
Oh, really?
No.
Well, let us tell you what we did. We had a team. Aaron,
you
were the leader.
I'm not comfortable with being the leader. I'll be the figurehead, I guess.
You were the chief cheerleader, if nothing else. You were the one that was super excited and got us all together.
I was really excited about this.
Yeah.
I was maybe too excited. I was almost to the point of annoyance, I think.
Well, what do we say? It was like if Pedalpalooza is Christmas, then this is like Bike Easter or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but we
I
had
think that's a really good analogy because, like, you know, Christmas takes forever, and by the time it's over, you're almost like, oh, thank God it's over.
I'm glad they're taking down the decorations.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But then you know, Easter is just the one day thing.
And you get candy.
And you get candy.
Or in this case, beer.
Or DVDs.
Or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we were Team Sincerity. This was, well, should we talk about the motif first?
The motif of our team?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think you have to explain Team Sincerity a little bit first.
Okay. So Team Sincerity, I think that initially came from our bike trip to Crater Lake.
Correct.
Where we were riding around and went down to the lake. And
That is in the double digit episodes. That's in the way, way back.
It's like 3-4 years ago, something like that. Long time back. But that was when Team Sincerity became a thing, and it's had various iterations over various times.
Yeah, just various basically events. If you do a ride with us, I at least in my head, I dub us Team Sincerity.
Right, so you might not even know.
Yeah.
But this time we all had costumes.
But this time we were an official team.
Yeah, yeah. So this time around, Team Sincerity was you, I, Adele,
Jeff Everett,
Daniel Harkins. Yeah, and Team Sincerity, who's the most sincere of like anybody in the entire world? Who's the most sincere?
Hard to
what
say.
What kind of person? I say Mormons because that's what we were addressed as.
Well, so, okay, yeah. So that's how that came about was not necessarily who's the most sincere, but I was riding around and I passed these bike Mormons. And yeah, they're on bikes.
Yeah.
You know,
they're the best kind of Mormons.
Right. Other than that,
they're all right.
All of them are nice, but the bike Mormons are the really cool ones.
You know, regardless of how I feel about their theology.
Say what you will about the tenets of polygamous society.
Of modern Latter-day Saints.
They're not polygamous anymore.
No. But they're really sold into what they believe, and they're really sincere about it. And so, you know, needing a cohesive theme for this event just seemed to be, I don't know, fortuitous.
Yeah, it was fitting. It worked out very well.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we all wore white shirts with the sleeves cut off or torn off.
Right.
Mine was way too big for me.
Because it was hot out and punk rock as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And what? Black pants, black ties.
Black pants, black ties.
And everyone had like
name tags.
Yes, we had name tags, which we won't go into the details. Maybe that'll be an
Mr.
extra
Everett
thing.
Designed those really well.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was what? Elder, insert name.
Insert your last name or sister for
right.
your wife. Sister Didis.
What? From the Church of Team Sincerity?
From the Church of Team Sincerity of Clearly Not Mormons.
Right, right. In the font and this design that you would expect from the nameplate of a Mormon missionary. Yeah.
That was all Jeff's right there.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
That was his concept and design.
He does work with visuals. Yeah. So, yeah, that was fun. But I think for me, one of the funnest things was oftentimes being at the back of the pack and seeing like heads turn. Because you're used to seeing two Mormon missionaries, but you're not used to seeing like five of them charging in a pace line across town doing a scavenger hunt.
Like charging, like we were pedaling pretty hard at it a number of times. I was not aware of all of this happening. I was so driven and so like, we got to get to the next spot. We got to do this, you know. there was a point in time where I did intentionally go like, okay, I'm going to sweep now because I knew I was just really blowing everyone out.
And oh, sweep as in like take up the rear?
Stay in the back.
Yeah.
So in addition to having costumes and being adorable, what did you boys do?
Being adorable? Aw.
Thanks. We were doing, it's basically the premise of an alley cat is that someone gives you a list of things you have to go and get or find or take a picture of or whatever, and then you go out and do that. So we did, there's like 20 things plus extra challenges if you chose to complete them.
Yes.
And
and I think we were the only team where all five of us got pictured on top of Mount Tabor.
Oh, really? The only team?
I think so.
Nobody else really wanted
that,
to go up
I'll
to
assert
the top.
That now, and all of you who are listening that have been a part of that, please correct me.
Haters gonna hate. That's the
go
thing.
Go ahead. Yeah. Hate on. I can take it.
So, yeah, that was a fun event. Anyways, there was a costume contest. We came in second.
Yeah, we were really close.
Yeah. And
I really thought we had it in the bag. I was kind of surprised, but the guys who got it, you know, they also did very well.
Exactly, yes. They were dressed up as what was the Mike Myers character?
Yeah. So it was the Saturday Night Live running skit. Sprockets.
Right.
And it was, that whole like German television show parody.
Yeah.
And they had a dance.
We just had a slogan
that we all said at one time. We all raised
our fist.
Yeah.
And said, best day ever.
Best day ever.
Yeah. And it was a lot of fun. Oh, also, I was going to mention this in the mail, but I should just say, listener Richard from Texas, and actually I have his...
Oh, that's right, because we had Titax.
I have this right here. Yes, I am sending you a few bikes may use full lane pins, which I had produced for cyclists to show their support for bicycle awareness. Here in North Texas, we don't have the great bike infrastructure that you guys have in Portland. Almost all of our rides involve sharing the road with cars. One of the best forms of driver education that we have are these road signs, which help inform road users of our right to take the full lane. Unfortunately, they're only a small solution to a bigger problem. Please enjoy these pins and share with your friends. They'll look great on your favorite hat, backpack, or pannier, or in the middle of your tie. So we used them as tie pins, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, thanks, Richard. And I think that kind of completed the ensemble. So we should make sure we put links to some sort of gallery or something like that. So... yeah. And then the last thing we were going to mention is that I did, in fact, rent a moving truck. And this might be a good segue because...
Before that.
You got a thing.
Yes. Because I have to talk about what I'm drinking.
Oh, you do. Right. And I have to open my drink.
Yes.
And
it's not... It's like the... I don't know. The most common soda I've ever had here.
Yeah, man.
I usually try for uniqueness.
So boring.
But on the request of my brother Tito, who... hopefully he's listening to this. It's his birthday today.
Happy birthday, Tito.
Something. Happy birthday, Tito.
but yeah. On the request of him, he said, buy a Jones soda. I can choose the flavor.
Any Jones.
So today I chose green apple soda. And there's a picture of a lady kite surfing.
There you go.
Which is kind of local here.
Oh, nice. Yeah. It's like a Hood River Jones soda.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Or a John Kerry Jones soda.
That's a lollipop liquefied.
We also have the guest beers. These are the fancy ones. And either of you have evaluations yet?
Oh, yes. I'm drinking the Joey Pepper. It is a Belgian blonde from Evil Twin Brewing. Not actually brewed by Evil Twin. It was brewed at the Westbrook Brewing Company in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina for Evil Twin Brewing. So apparently, this is good. It means that Evil Twin got so popular that they no longer had the capacity to actually sell to their entire market.
Or possibly they don't have a sour line that they want to be brewing their sour beers.
It's true, because
I wouldn't blame them.
Sanitation is just brutal with these things. You don't want to get that. You don't going to get the lactobacillus into the other lines, or then all you make is sour beers forever.
Right. I can see that being a problem.
Huh.
Yeah, but
it's kind of like the red ink in the washing machine with all your laundry.
Exactly. Yeah. That's like you replace the drum, right? Mm-hmm. There's nothing else to do.
If the red ink were self-replicating.
Okay, there we go.
Self-replicating, right.
Yeah, you know, like yeast.
Yeah. All right, there we go. Yeah. So they're farming out their brewing work, when good on them, because they're doing it well.
Yes, good on them. They're making the money any way they can. And also, it's delicious, so.
As anyone should.
Out hustling.
Everybody else. Yeah. Katie, what do you have there?
I have a gigantic brewing company, Volta.
Also, there's the train. Everybody say hi to the train.
Hello, train.
Hi, train.
Is it Amtrak or Conrail or Pacific?
It's a freight train.
That's a Union Pacific. There's also a Seahawks van outside. Van with the Seahawks logo. Yeah.
The beer I have is beer number 21, Volta beer. It is a Saison.
Wow, that's really coming in.
That's amazing, yeah.
That's a particularly loud train.
Yeah.
It's a good slow one.
Yeah. They don't truck through here at all. They take their time.
It is light and fruity and spicy and pretty delicious, so
excellent.
There
we go.
Much. Yes.
Well, I think you had asked, Katie, for what, sour beers, big beers, and weird beers, and so I did my best.
Yeah, well done. And it has a picture of a large man with a tiny head straddling a canoe being chased by sharks on the front.
So that counts as weird and big.
I feel that's solid,
That's a tuna.
It may be a tuna.
The fins are too long.
It's made of clay in any case.
You can tell that from the drawing?
Yes.
Fascinating. Okay. Well, there we go. I'm drinking Hilliard's Amber again because it's good. So I rented a moving truck, and Steph Routh was extremely disappointed. Former guest, she's the one that wrote How to Move by Bike, and she's the one that helped me and inspired me to move by bike last time I moved. this time around, my schedule, my work schedule, my a level of energy, and the number of people available on Labor Day, like on September 1st,
yes,
would have been it would have conspired against me for a disaster. So I rented a U-Haul truck because there is one, and it worked out okay. So I'm curious, David and Katie, have you ever had an experience where you're like, I would rather not use a combustion engine, but I'm going to?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Okay.
All the time.
Okay.
Unfortunately, but both. Like, on one hand, it would be awesome to do everything without internal combustion engines. On the other hand, there are some things that are only available to us through the remarkable engineering feat of the internal combustion engine. And for those particular use cases, they are absolutely the right thing to do.
Okay.
And there's just no way, no getting around it.
So I shouldn't feel bad.
No, you shouldn't feel bad.
Well, okay. If Steph says you should feel bad, you should maybe feel bad.
Well, the thing is, Steph's a really nice person, but she was also, I felt like she was very...
She was out of town anyway.
You should definitely feel bad really around was. Steph.
Okay, sounds good.
So I feel like I should say I'm in the book.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. And we moved by bike, mm-hmm. our four-person, well, at that point, 3.75-person household.
Yeah.
But we only moved a block and a half.
Okay.
It was actually mostly a pedestrian
A move oh. by shoe
situation because it was blocked, but we had it, you know, we posted on the list and we had all of our friends over and they moved us a block and a half, which was amazing.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, and it was also on one hand, we had a, you know, a fully furnished house that needed to move. And so there were two good things that made that bike move work really well, because the first was that we were only moving a block and a half away,
right?
Which means that we made lots of trips and nobody stressed out about, oh, I'm going to pack on everything we can. So when it came time to move, well, except for the people who really wanted to, there was an amazing photo of an EcoSpeed e-assisted Bullet with a custom enormous trailer towing it. And the front of the Bullet had, I don't even remember. It was totally packed with boxes and stuff.
Yeah.
And the
cat tower and half the library, and, I think.
Right, on the front. And then on the back, I think was like four small bookshelves and a 250-pound bandsaw and like other things lashed on top of it. And that was just Joel showing off.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Joel from Splendid Cycles?
Yes.
He wasn't there. He lent it to somebody who came and
wrote. But it still could have been Joel showing off.
It was definitely Joel showing off.
Okay. But this is an electric cargo bike, or an electric assist, rather, with just enormous cargo capacity.
Absolutely.
But that's something that I think is common to move by bike is, and one of the things that makes it so fun is that you have these people who kind of want to test. Or not even test, but each show off their capacity for carrying stuff.
Absolutely.
Take it to the limit.
Take it to the limit.
Yeah. So was there a time when you moved that you did not move by bike?
Yes.
Yeah. And yes. What did you use at that point?
Well, we moved once by moving van that we drove ourselves. It was a Penske truck, and we drove it from Eugene, Oregon to Ithaca, New York.
Which would have been
a hell of a bike move.
No kidding.
And then when we moved back from Ithaca, New York to Portland, we did it with a pod vehicle. So we put all of our things in a container, and then that container was moved across the country on our behalf.
Oh, right.
And we drove our car. We drove our car that we owned for 5 years.
5 years.
5 years. Mm-hmm. From Ithaca, New York to Portland, and promptly sold it.
Okay. There we go. So it was a tool for the job. It was like, this car will get us here.
Yes.
This car. Well, we drove it for 5 years in Ithaca.
Yeah.
And then we drove it to here.
This car will get us around Ithaca, and it will get us to Portland.
And then we are in Portland, and then we don't need a car anymore. And we sold it, I think, 2 weeks after we landed.
Yeah.
I think it was three. I needed a little convincing there at the beginning.
So what convinced you, David?
The cost of parking downtown.
Ooh.
So when we landed in town, we got a sublet for a few months in an apartment right downtown because it was very central and we didn't know what neighborhood we wanted to live in yet. And so this was kind of like our tester.
And
tester
at this point,
place.
Did you guys have kids yet?
Or? I was this pregnant.
Okay. She's holding her arms out quite far.
Yes. Right. But it was like a county fair pumpkin size.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we were looking around, you know, specifically for a neighborhood that we would be able to live in without needing to have a car.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be easy to get around on bikes and by foot. And I work out in Hillsboro, but one of the reasons that it was easy to take the job in Hillsboro and choose to live in Portland was because my office out there is a mile away from a Blue Line stop. Oh, and so I...
The Max light rail.
Exactly. Yeah. I take the Max to work, and I have for 5 years, and it's been really nice.
There you go. So that works out okay. That really does. And the drive is lame. I'm sure you may have had to do it once or twice, like, for various reasons.
Yeah, I've had to do it once or twice, and there's... Every time I do it, going out when I'm especially like if I start early in the morning. Uh-huh. And so the commute out there is ridiculously fast. Okay. And every time I do it, I'm like, oh, my God, I waste so much of my life on the train.
It's so easy.
Fast and easy. Like, and we're in the close in on the east side. And so I even need to go across a bridge before I get on Highway 26 and go all the way out to Hillsboro.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And other coworkers I have live on the west side or really close to the 405, so they don't need to worry about bridges, and they're like, yeah, I'm like 2 blocks away from the highway, and then I just go to work, and it only takes me 15 minutes, but it only takes me about half an hour,
okay,
in the time that I need to go. But every single time that I've gotten a ride from someone home,
yeah,
for whatever reason, like they felt sorry for me, like my first couple of years out there, and they're like, oh, it's hailing, you don't want to ride through that. And I'm like, actually, that's really big hail. I actually don't want to ride through that, even the mile to the train station. And so I take him up on a ride, and invariably, it takes an hour and a half to get home.
Especially when it's hailing.
You know, the hail isn't that bad.
Oh, okay.
But when it snows, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, you have to go over the West Hill, the Tualatin Mountains.
Yes.
Which, they're not mountains to some, but I think by the stake, at least by East Coast standards. Was that fair?
Yes.
They're East Coast mountains?
Definitely. Yeah, there would totally be ski lifts on those.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we call it the zoo bomb. But no, it's that's not necessarily a pleasant place to be in a motor vehicle, especially because there is the tunnel that you have to go through on your descent into Portland proper after you've gone over the hill coming home. And bad things can happen in that tunnel or near that tunnel just because, like, people are merging and going to and fro in their cars. And
the problem is that they are merging when they're not supposed to. There are
amazing
signs that say, look, there's three lanes, and the right one goes south on the 405, and the left one goes north on the 405, and the middle one goes to downtown, and you are not allowed to change your lanes once you get into the tunnel.
And no one pays attention to those. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's also
like
hard.
Once you're in the tunnel, they still are like, oh, shit, I need to be over here.
Oh,
what was I thinking?
It's not even that, because there's no signs in the tunnel.
Uh-huh.
So people are like, oh, my God, I'm in a tunnel. And then as soon as they come out, there's another sign that says right lane is going south 405, left lane going north 405. This one is going into Market Street. And that's when people realize, oh, my God, that's right now?
I have to merge.
I have to merge now. I don't want to go south. I want to go north. And what they don't say is that if you screw up in a quarter mile, you're going to get off it and get into downtown anyway if you really need to.
There are other chances. Oh, okay.
There are other chances, but people think there's going to be another chance, and there isn't. I think they should just take those signs out so that people are already screwed up by the time that they have an opportunity to do anything about
it. So no one knows
so nobody tries to merge.
Okay. So this is a good reason not to have a car, because it's confusing and it's
stressful.
No fun. And stressful, yeah.
Yeah.
So what are the underlying, like, do you guys have super deeply held philosophical beliefs that drove you to this point where you didn't want to have a car?
Did an angel come to you in the night?
I don't remember exactly when it came, where it came from, but we've distilled a piece of knowledge that I still believe. I don't have a lot of empirical evidence for this particular assertion, but I believe that the time that you spend on a bike isn't taken off your lifespan, and the time spent in a car counts double.
Okay.
And I think with everything we're learning about sedentary lifestyles and exhaust breathing and all of this, I don't think anybody's going to try to, you know, go against me on that one.
Right. I imagine there's got to be numbers around that somewhere.
Yeah, and I think it's going to average to time in a bike doesn't count, time in a car counts double.
Yeah, I like this.
So I would supplement that with when Dave and I started seeing each other, we had no car because we were poor and college students, and that's what you do. College kids be biking. So we had a first generation extra cycle, and we hauled around our laundry and groceries on that thing. And then that got stolen.
I can't believe someone stole a bike named Shitty.
It was very sad.
That was the name. Huh?
That was the name. And then we replaced it with a Burley trailer, and then we used the Burley trailer. And then we went to graduate school, and we lived not just in Ithaca, New York, which is a hard place to bike because there are very steep hills and very deep gorges, which are gorgeous. And
gorgeous.
They are. And yeah, but then we bought a house in the boonies, and then we had a 5-mile commute. And I remember thinking very distinctly.
It was 10 miles each way.
I remember thinking very distinctly that 10 miles each way was a bike ride that I could totally do. That's fine. Yeah. I can ride 20 miles a day. No problem. Except for that it was really cold in the winter and really hot and sticky in the summer. And the drivers were awful. And I got run off the road repeatedly and had all sorts of scaring your misses, and I was done.
So that became unpleasant.
And you also, the only showers available were at the
athletic center.
It was...
Like the YMCA equivalent?
No, at the campus gym.
It was the campus gym, which was peopled almost entirely by Ivy League jocks.
Okay, right. And so they're pumping
just
their
like
iron.
Two great tastes that do not taste great together.
So we bought a car. We had a little Ford Focus. She was a good little car, and we had a 30-minute each-way commute every day, and it was not awesome. And
parts of it were very exciting, though. It snowed a lot. And we were grad students, so we couldn't stay home.
There we go. Yeah. So you had some adventures getting to and from places.
Yeah, I learned how to drift.
Nice. Ithaca Drift, Fast and Furious 8.
That's ours, Michael Bay. You can't have it.
No, man.
We're writing that movie. Yeah, I don't know. Okay.
Yeah, but Vin Diesel, if you want to make that one, all yours.
Let's talk.
Well, he could play you.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah, I could see that.
I would die happy.
He'd be slightly less good looking than you are. So... yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to butter you up.
So when Dave took the job that was going to bring us to Portland, I basically spent a lot of time on the internet reading Bike Portland.
Okay.
Hi, Jonathan.
Jonathan Miles.
And
it's a great resource.
Reading Bike Portland, getting way excited about coming to Portland, and explained to Dave that when we got here, we were going to sell the car, and...
I totally had Stockholm syndrome at this point.
I was going to say, was this like a argument? Was it just like I'm putting my foot down, or was there? I don't know. Like, how did this decision?
Well, I feel we should rewind. When Dave and I had been dating, I think I don't know six months. We'll go with 6 months. I was doing a journalism class project, and it involved sustainable manufacturing, and he worked in a bike shop, and I went to him and I said, "Hey, new boyfriend, who does sustainable manufacturing?"
That's a great pet name, by the way.
"Who does sustainable manufacturing in Eugene that I could interview for my journalism class?" And he said, "Well, you should talk to the Burley Design Cooperative. They recycle all their paints and all of their wastewater, and they do all kinds of cool filtering, and you should talk to them." So I rode my bike out, and I talked to Burley Design Cooperative, and they gave me a brochure, and the brochure at that time, when they were still a cooperative, was all employees riding their bikes with their kids, their trailer bikes, their trailers, their tandems, all their cute kids on their cute bikes, being cute.
All of which Burley made at that point, right?
All of which they made, along with rain gear and all sorts of other things they no longer manufacture.
Right, now they're more of just a trailer company?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And privately held. But,
okay.
And profitable.
So it goes.
I wish it could have been otherwise.
And I took this beautiful brochure, and I looked at it, and I took it home, and I basically sighed deeply and said, "That boy, I'm going to marry that boy. And we're going to have babies, and we're going to ride them around on our bikes, just like these people in this catalog."
It's going to be awesome.
If a dream wall existed, you would put this brochure on your dream wall.
I didn't tell him at the time, but so when it was like, "Hey, we're going to move to Portland, and I'm pregnant," I was like, "Oh. Well, then this is the part where we get rid of the car."
This fits into the master plan.
It's like two-thirds of the way there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was, for me, there was no question. And Dave just needed a little convincing.
I distinctly remember a trip when we were in grad school, and we were in Albuquerque in the summer, and it was nice, not too hot because it was high altitude. And we stopped in a combination bike and coffee shop.
The Coffee Peddler in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
You should go there. It's great.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
We watched the tour there for a whole morning. It was wonderful.
And we were there, and so we were drinking coffee. We were watching the tour on their big screen TV. We're sitting on their couch.
The tour to France?
Yeah.
Okay.
The tour. And there was a current year brochure from Burley on the table. And that's when I opened it up, and it's like that brochure and that moment of looking at it, and we sat there on that couch and we talked about it, and that's when you like you put the seed into my brain. It was like, that's gonna be us someday. We didn't know that we were going to Portland yet, but okay. Like, look, people ride bikes with kids.
Or,
like, oh, that's
or at
amazing.
Least you didn't know you were going to Portland.
I didn't have a job offer yet. Oh, was that just convenient?
I don't know. I'm getting this vibe from Katie. Yeah.
No, we were both academics. We thought we could wind up in Hoboken anywhere. Or something. Yeah.
Would Hoboken have been awesome? No.
Okay. No.
All right.
Sorry, Hoboken.
It's okay.
We did our time on that coast.
So what was the initial, you said there was convincing that needed to be done for David. So what convincing was that?
I don't feel like there was ever an argument. I feel like
that's good.
I said, we're going to need a cargo bike. And he said, well, and I said, what cargo bike should we get? And he said, and I said, this one fits our budget. And he said, okay. And then the cargo bike showed up.
There we go.
And then there was a whole kerfuffle around getting it built properly because it was a V2 Yuba, which there were all sorts of problems with.
Prototypes in the wild, baby.
Okay, look out. Okay.
But then we had the Yuba, and then I was like, so when do we sell the car? And he was like, well, and I'm like, I'll put a listing up. And he's like, okay. And then we were on our first cargo bike grocery trip to Food Front in Northwest. And we had, like, ridden the bike there. We bought our groceries. On the way back, we got a phone call, and it was the person who bought the car.
Oh, there we go. So it was the magic bike ride.
Yeah. Yeah. So as soon as we put the cargo bike into use, the car went away. And we sold it, the next day. Someone showed up and bought the car.
That's not bad.
And then it was just me and Dave, and each of us had a single city bike, and we had a cargo bike.
Okay. So, again, there's the train again. Maybe I'll edit this one out.
Yeah, we'll just wait.
Yeah. Give it like 2 minutes.
I was about to say something really dumb like, oh, it doesn't seem as loud, but we'll just wait.
We're trying to figure out, I don't think freight trains run on regular schedules because they just show up pretty much whenever they want to.
Yeah. I mean, this one's got the low rumble. Right?
Yeah.
It's all about that bass.
Seriously.
Oh. Let's get some hydraulics on that train.
I think it was just an engine.
Okay, that's possible. I was going to ask again. What was the was this about like oil politics or about some other conviction?
So it's definitely partly oil politics. It's some global warming sort of politics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a really mean person when I'm in a car.
Okay.
I feel the need to point this. I grew up in California.
So it just kind of comes naturally.
When I was a driver,
there's some sort of psychological self-preservation going on.
When I was a teenage driver, I had a weekly commute from Salinas to Palo Alto, which was, a good 90 minutes at 90 miles an hour in the fast lane, which is how I did it. And so I was like this really aggressive driver, and I was not very nice about it. And when I drive, I feel I get very stressed, and I get very dehumanizing to other people on the road in ways that are not particularly admirable. And
you're being so diplomatic about this. It's great.
I will say I really love road trips.
Yeah.
I really love like cross-country driving. Mm-hmm. Makes me really happy. I find really satisfying, especially on little bitty highways. Like I like seeing antelope and that sort of thing. And tiny diners with really greasy food make me very happy. And
when you know where you're going and you know what road you're going to take and you've actually budgeted enough time to get there, it's not stressful because you don't need to speed. You don't need to get somewhere fast. There's no hurry. You're there because driving actually can be really fun.
That's a whole different paradigm we're talking about.
I'm a terrible city driver. Not that I'm bad at it, but I'm not nice when I'm doing it. And I prefer not to.
So do you find that you're in a better headspace on a bicycle?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Because at one point, I remember we talked about swearing with kids on the back when you get disrupted.
We did talk about that.
Yeah. And so there are occasionally those. But the sum total is like you are happier on a bike than you are driving in the city.
I am happier on a bike than when I'm driving in the city.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's fair.
And I believe that it's important to make the choices that make you happier.
Right. Right. Well, and there's a lot of people doing things because they feel like they should out of some sort of compulsion. And if you can do something on your own, because you want to, as opposed to
out of a sense of need.
Right, right.
Or a perceived sense of need.
So this is where I feel like, I think it's really dangerous. A lot of people get the message that, oh, you should bike because it's good for the environment, or you should bike because whatever. But I think there's a lot
of people...
Which
you should. But
yes, you should. Don't get the wrong message here. But especially here in Portland, I think it's easy to get the message like, well, you should bike because that's what everybody does, or like, it's, at least it's what the cool people do. And I don't think you should bike if you don't want to bike.
Right.
I've known some people who have, and they haven't.
Especially
it hasn't made them happier.
If you're not going to enjoy it, you know.
Right.
I mean, in the same vein, you shouldn't drive if you're not going to enjoy it either.
That's true.
You know? Especially, you shouldn't drive.
You should definitely become a homebound recluse if transportation is stressful to you. Wait, this is not a good plan.
Don't
Simplifying the good life.
Yeah.
Here on the Sprocket, the Hermit episode.
Right, right.
Can you find a hermit? You might have to go to them.
We might have to be an on location.
We'll go to them.
Yeah.
The agoraphobia episode.
And they do exist. They are out there.
Yeah.
So there's another thing that I was thinking of, and one of the first reasons that I wanted to have you all in here was that, Katie, I think you had put something on Facebook a couple months ago, something about the idea that the car-free life in Portland unfortunately involves owning a car. Is this, did you say this?
That was not me.
Okay. Well, in that case, we'll move right on.
All right. Everything's good now.
Well, somebody else said that. I'd like to know who it was.
But it brings up a point of, I mean, what would it take to get you into a used car?
So
that was amazing.
Right.
That was good. I'm stunned.
Dave's run the numbers.
Give me a moment. Yeah, so
Dave wants to talk to you about this.
Yeah, I have my numbers. I have my notebook here.
I did my research
on my train commute on the way back, which is, you know, time that I can prepare for things like this.
Yeah.
And one of the things that might get me into a used car is it actually being cheaper to own a car than for paying for other types of car type transportation services.
Uh-huh.
So we're Zipcar members. This is one of the ways that we make not owning a car work. And that when the thing that we need to do is or want to do is really the right thing to do is get a car. Like, say we're going to a friend's house in Beaverton and the kids aren't coming with us and it's going to be late and I don't want to bike back across those hills.
It's like deep Beaverton.
Yeah. Deep Beaverton, like in the woods.
Okay.
He found a place in the woods in Beaverton
where the beavers hang out.
Where it really,
he
really
does
was.
Have a creek.
Okay.
We had beavers in Ithaca. They were cute.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was going to say, I've never seen one in Oregon. I'm not sure if that's true. I've seen Nutria. They're not from here. But yes, Zipcar.
I know. You're so old school.
I know. Zipcar, a car sharing service.
So we use Zipcar whenever it's the right thing to do. And it delightfully, it usually isn't. But when it is the right thing to do, we have no hesitation in doing it. And one of the kind of like handshake agreements that we did when we sold the car was that I ran all the numbers on how much it actually cost to own and use our car over the 5 years that we owned it, because I'm a scientist and an engineer and I kept all the receipts and I had a spreadsheet of all the maintenance schedules and things like that. And so I had a record of all the mileage that we had and all the maintenance that got done on it. And so I actually know how much it cost us to own and use a Ford Focus. Relatively, you know, reasonable
car.
One of
the more economic.
It's not a hybrid or anything, but this is not a crazy automobile. And what it came down to was that if we hadn't used it at all for commuting, it cost about $2,500 a year. And when we were using it for commuting, it cost about $4,500 a year.
Holy shit.
To own and use it. By the mile, that Ford Focus cost us, with the commuting in there and road trips and stuff like that, cost us about 40 cents a mile.
Okay.
And considering that the U.S. government reimburses about 50, 52 cents a mile.
I was going to say, you got 12 cents to play with there.
Exactly. It's totally reasonable, right? Like, everyone's like, oh, man, I'm totally ripping off the government. They're paying me to drive. And it's like, no, you're driving your Ford Explorer. You're still losing money.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, we had a few considerations that made that more expensive than it probably otherwise would, which is that they salt the roads all winter long in Ithaca, so we had some undercarriage rusting.
It eats away at the paint and everything.
Well, we had to replace the AC system because it died because it actually, like, the compressor rusted through.
Oh, wow.
And so when they put the new one in, they're like, oh, yeah, every time we put a new one in, and we do all the time because this is Ithaca, we always get this, like, rust inhibitor spray that we, like, you know, spray the whole bottom of the thing so that that won't happen again, at least for, you know, another 10 years down the road.
And it happened next winter.
It didn't. Then, like, 4 months later, we drove it to Portland and sold it to someone else.
There we go.
And it's never going to rust.
Sold it. Hey, new AC.
Exactly.
And it's got that really nice Rust-Oleum on there.
Totally.
It's all the things you wouldn't use on the West Coast, I guess.
Right.
Yes, exactly. It was tried. It's like, look, everything that was going to break, I already broke and replaced. You are fine.
This is the perfect used car.
Yeah. And so it's a, and we also spent kind of a lot of money on tires because snow tires are how you commute if you're going to commute over.
Mind the drift.
Yeah. I only had to get it pulled out of an actual drift once.
Was it a soft drift? Like just a big pile of snow?
It was a deep ditch.
Whoop, whoop, foof.
So that was exciting.
Oh yeah. That was one of the exciting ones. Yeah, nice. That was good. Yeah, we actually, so we don't like AAA because they advocate against bike infrastructure and stuff like that, but it's really nice to have roadside assistance if you're going to own a car. And so we were members of the Better World Club, and they do roadside assistance also for bicycles.
Are they the ones
AAA
that offer?
AAA, I think, is also trying to get into the
AAA
whole
does.
Yeah, but they still suck.
They do roadside assistance for bicycles in Oregon and Idaho and Washington, but they still also put their lobbying money against public transit and bicycles.
Oh, yeah,
so screw those guys.
Right.
It's all PR.
It's all PR.
Right in the ear.
Seriously. Yeah, right definitely. They're weird shaped ears. Better World Club is the one. Weren't they also offering insurance for bicyclists? Like, if you don't own a car, are they the ones, or was it somebody else?
Did they?
I think they do.
Okay. I don't have it yet.
Replacement insurance, I think so.
I should look into that.
Yeah, we'll double check.
Maybe we'll have them on the show. We'll talk to them sometime.
They're based in Seattle. Yeah.
Okay. There we go. Yeah, and I think they were using, was it Gales Creek Insurance Company, if I recall?
Oh, that's adorable.
Out of Western Washington County to actually do the insuring of bicyclists. So we'll do some research and get back to you on that.
So, funny enough, Gales Creek is a beautiful segue into what I've been spending a lot of money on Zipcars on, which may actually convince me to buy a car, even though I don't want to own a car, which is mountain biking.
Okay.
Because there's basically almost nowhere to go mountain biking, less than an hour drive away from Portland.
Yeah, and I'm very curious about this. This has been a sore spot for a lot of people who mountain bike. Katie, did you do some mountain biking? Very
small. This hole in my leg here is from my second ever mountain biking expedition.
Okay.
There's still a big hole in my leg, but as soon as it heals up, I'm game.
Okay, there we go. So just in time. Yeah.
I like hiking. I like skiing.
Right.
Mountain biking is new to me.
Okay, but these are all things that are very hard to do if you don't own a car.
They are.
So
they're not hard to do. It's because there are services like Zipcar. It's very easy to reserve exactly the right car.
I'm glad
to do what you
want
to do.
That's good. Yeah.
But
a lot of the Zipcars even come with force passes, so you can park in the force pass.
Not as many as they used to. It's basically only the some of the like smaller SUVs and the Outback station wagons
have
force passes.
You can get a force pass. You can go. You can park at the trailhead. You can leave your Zipcar overnight. You can go for your hike. It's good.
You don't need to buy an entrance permit to state parks and stuff because that counts,
which is
really nice, but. It's minimum $80 a day. And if you're going to get, and it's like $11 an hour. And so if you're going to go out mountain biking for the day, you're probably going to get it for the whole day. And it's like $80.
Okay.
And that can be, and that's a lot of money. Every day you want to go mountain biking, you're paying $80.
That
right?
is, like, yeah.
There's, Zipcar just put a couple Zipcars out by my work in Hillsboro. And I'm trying to figure out, like, get the trails and traffic well done, like understood well enough that I can get a 4-hour reservation and spend a half an hour in a Zipcar and like instead of taking my folding bike on the train, take my mountain bike on the train
leave it
locked up outside my office in the parking garage and then ride back and put it on the back of a Zipcar, right? Or in just, you know, take the wheels off and shove it in, find a way, drive up to the Tillamook Forest down on Highway 6 above Gales Creek, where there are some excellent, excellent mountain biking trails, and ride for 3 hours and then drive a half hour back. And it's like, oh, yeah, I got to go mountain biking for only $40.
Yeah.
But right now, and I just started getting back into mountain biking. I used to mountain bike a whole lot back in college, but then grad school and babies. And now, time. I can actually have a hobby again. And the amount of money that we've spent in the last year on zip cars, and I've only been like getting back into mountain biking this summer, is like $2,300.
Okay.
Where, like I said, the occasional use cost of owning that Focus, not using it for commuting, this is like grocery runs and going hiking and stuff, was about $2,500 a year.
Oh. So you're getting close to that number.
We're getting close to that number. And so, and the balance is that when you get a zip car, if you plan ahead enough, you can always get the right car. If you need that cargo van because you're going to do shuttle runs with eight people, you're probably still going to get that instead of taking your own car. Right, because you just can't do that in an efficient sedan or
you
something.
You can't put eight people into a Focus.
Well, not legally.
I think that points to a certain philosophy a lot of car owners have is like, I need to get this minivan or I need to get this 18-passenger van because I want to do these runs up the mountain with my friends and stuff like that. But then, so that's going to happen once, twice a month. And then you have this van as your, like, daily commuter.
And it's worth saying that if what you have is a minivan or a Ford Explorer or something, that's not going to be $2,500.
Right.
No, that's going to be a lot. The insurance is going to be a whole lot more. The depreciation is going to be crazy big. So my numbers of the about $2,500 and about $4,500, that includes depreciation because I bought the thing used and then I sold it used. Like, I think I did a pretty good job of actually putting all the costs in there. And the only things that I didn't put in are the opportunity costs and health costs of choosing to live in a place where biking as part of a daily routine in a utility sense was really not an option. There was no infrastructure. The weather was terrible and it was just a giant pain in the ass. And so we did one grocery run in Ithaca when we still lived in town before we moved out to the country on with the same rig that we used back in college. It was, you know, my Surly with the Burley trailer in the back, and we're only going like 3/4 of a mile. We got honked at by like 7 cars and had to dodge like 20 potholes. It was crazy.
That's intense.
And it was like, yeah, I don't think that's actually going to work.
Right.
Because it's not what I'm going to look forward to on Sunday when that's the only time that I'm not in the lab.
Yeah. Not here, not in this way.
Exactly.
Well, and that's what's going to make biking as a utility thing more viable is the fact that you would enjoy it, you know. If you're making it a chore on your day off, no less.
Yeah.
Right. And
you're going to be less apt to want to do it.
Right. And Ithaca made it a chore for me. I didn't even have to work at that. Right. Some people are going to make it a chore no matter where they are, but
but I do feel like we should say, because I don't think we have, and I've been on a couple of times, but, you know, most of your listeners don't know me. Some of your listeners know me.
Listeners, this is Katie.
Hi, I'm Katie.
Yeah. Say hi.
So at this point, hi. We have 2 kids. Our kids are little. Our kids go to preschool. Dave and I both work full time. And so the daily bit, not the mountain biking bit, not the, you know, going to the beach bit, is every day I do 8 miles and Dave does 10.
Okay.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's about right.
So that's a fairly stout
so
distance.
We have some solid pedaling every day.
Mm-hmm.
And about half of that for each of us is on every day is on the cargo bike, which has a folding bike strapped to one side of it and our work bag and the kids' lunches on the other and then 2 kids on top of it.
That's pretty heavy duty.
It's actually kind of lovely. People, every once in a while, I get passed by people on, you know, some mammals on the Hawthorne Bridge, and the cat sixers. But every once in a while, they're impressed enough that they stop and say, and they don't say, "Hey, your kids are really cute," or "That's an amazing bike," or "I'm really glad that you're doing that." Or though some people do that, they're the nice people. The mammals are the ones who say, "What is that way?" Ha 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 ha. And I tell them, and I say,
"Nobody ever says
what
that to
way."
Me.
Yeah, I know. Because,
it's not polite to say that to a lady.
No,
it's,
you
don't ask a lady about the weight of her bicycle,
or just this. What is that weigh? That seems like it would go poorly.
Also, no one thinks that they can get into a measuring contest with a lady.
Oh, true,
also true,
true.
Also true. Yeah.
And well, I tell them, and the thing fully loaded like that is 180 pounds, And then they realize that I'm actually passing about half of the people on the Hawthorne Bridge. And then they shut the hell up.
And you're a scientist. Yeah.
So I know, because I'm measuring.
Don't get into a pissing match with a scientist, because he will find a way to squeeze his bladder.
Clamps.
This is a really odd metaphor.
And before you notice, he'll have you pissing into the wind.
Exactly. In way of closing, what would you guys tell to anyone who might be in one of the positions that you were in? Say, like, someone who's thinking, oh, I could really get rid of my car, or I might need a car.
How do I do this? How do I get rid of
my car? Yeah, what's the general advice for...
in the automobile.
Yes.
I feel like you need to figure out what you need to make that okay. Mm. For us, that was moving to where the infrastructure was.
Okay.
So living in inner southeast Portland means living with less space than we otherwise might, means living with tenants in our house who we love and they're amazing, but we have tenants in our house, means living, that's all I have to say.
It means that we don't take extraneous trips, car trips are planned if we're going far, and really even going across town is a trip that gets planned because we're going to go on their bike. It's going to take a while, and it's usually not a whole lot slower than a car because we don't need to deal with parking.
Yeah.
But we also can't use I-5, and when there's no traffic, I-5 is actually like a teleporter. It's like a wormhole, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, poof, I'm in St. John's. How did that happen?
What about that electric assist?
And yeah, those are really expensive.
They're really expensive.
But they're really cool.
They are really cool.
And so our kids don't hang out with their friends who live in other parts of town very often.
Okay.
But on the other hand, we live in a neighborhood that is really awesome for kids, and there's a bunch of kids on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when they come home from preschool, there's usually kids running around and screaming and riding bikes outside, which is pretty great.
So it feels like figure out what you need. Move where the infrastructure is, and then give yourself permission to slack off when you need to slack off. Like for us, it was, you can get a Zipcar whenever you want it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's inconvenient and kind of expensive, but it's not as expensive as owning a car. So
right.
Fine.
And you never have to fix it. And you never pay for gas.
That can be a huge cost. For like
repairs are expensive. Yeah. Gas is expensive. So I feel like giving yourself a lot of permission to be less than perfect is really important.
Hmm. That's good advice for a lot of things, but especially for simple mobility. Yeah. Well, excellent. Well, thank you for coming, and I really appreciate you guys sharing the story. This is there are fewer than should be people that are doing what you're doing, and I appreciate the template that you put out there. So,
well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much. It's been delightful to be here.
Well, how about we got some news? We got some mail.
We got some news and mail.
First off, hang on just a minute.
Can I news?
Yes.
At you? Critical Mass is on Sunday.
Is it?
It
this
is.
Sunday.
Hang on just
this
a minute.
Sunday.
Critical Mass on Sunday. Where is it?
Critical Mass is on Sunday. We're meeting at Abernethy Playground in Southeast Portland at 4 p.m. And we are riding to the Chapman School in Northwest Portland to go and watch the Swifts.
Oh, right, because they come in like a bird tornado.
They come in like a bird tornado.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So show up at Abernethy Playground at 4 p.m. We're going to hang out and play for a while. We're going to bring picnic dinners, and my understanding is that you also need cardboard to slide down a hill at the Chapman School.
Oh, that's right, yes.
So bring picnic dinners and cardboard, and 4 p.m. at Abernethy, and we'll stay at Chapman until after the birds go into the chimney whenever they make that choice.
Fabulous.
It's usually around sunset when they find out there.
And it's criticalmasspdx.org. O-R-G.
Or find us on Facebook or Twitter.
There we go. Fabulous. Now then, shall we do the headline? One headline that we have?
Let's do the headline.
All right.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as you can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as you can into the daylight.
From Pedal Shift. Not from Bike Portland this time.
Yes, Tim Mooney.
Tim Mooney sends us a little essay he did on trying Amtrak Express to ship a bike home after a tour.
It's actually, there's two articles now because he posted an update later telling us how it went.
Oh, well now. Yesterday, I entrusted Amtrak with my prize touring bike, Sequoia. Yet, I'm not riding Amtrak back home. How am I doing this? Amtrak has a lesser-known shipping service I'm trying called Amtrak Express. And here's why I went that route. And I'll just summarize this really quick. Easier boxing.
Yes.
Which you and I have experience in already. Mm-hmm. Like, the boxes for Amtrak are sized to a bicycle as opposed to...
Better than a bicycle box that it comes in for retail.
Right, yeah.
Because then you have to take everything off of it.
Which we've done.
Yes, yes we have.
Oh, he also mentions there is a bike box drought in Southern California right now.
Like everyone's taking their bikes and leaving?
Apparently so. Taking my bike and going home with the box. But yeah, you basically just roll your bike right in there, as opposed to trying to take it apart, mm-hmm. like we just mentioned.
Yep.
And because that bike box is so big, it would be like an oversized piece of luggage on an airplane, which is what he writes, $75 to $100.
Yeah, and it's a bike on an airplane, which airline companies are extortionists when it comes to trying to take your bike on a plane it's a bike.
Man?
Yeah, I know. They're crazy. Megalomaniacs for money.
Next is no lugging. Again, the good people at Amtrak take the box from you
after Red
you
caps. Box
it, and then they just put it right there in the train. If again, let's compare. Now that I'm mad at the airlines here.
Now that we got you on a tear.
Now that you've got me, you got me. As opposed to being on the airline, you're having to lug it from the parking lot or from the street side parking. Mm-hmm. Say someone dropped you off into the terminal, all down wherever.
You and your huge bike in a box.
Yeah. Anyways. That's not going to happen in your Amtrak boxing. Next, price for service. He mentions it cost him $76 to get from where he was in Southern California. Where was that again?
He ended up down in San Diego, I believe.
That's right. Yep, San Diego to D.C. And I don't know if that's a flat rate or if it's just the distance involved.
It's a good question. I believe it's variable pricing depending on distance, but it's not that much. Like it's not as expensive as it would be on a plane again.
Yeah. So he took, it's worth mentioning, he took the plane back though.
He did. Yeah. And this is why he used Amtrak Express as opposed to, I think you might be able to take that as some of your luggage or maybe at least a luggage fee or something.
Right.
If you're traveling with it, if you're just shipping it on the train, then you're like, I'm taking a different way home. He had to be home at a certain time.
Right.
So he flies. But his bike could get there a couple days later, be okay.
Which he mentions in the downside he had several days without his bike.
So own at least two bikes.
There you go.
Before you ship your bike. Right. So I guess this is not the poor man's solution.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I could try to live without my bike for a couple days. Mm, it would be difficult.
It would.
Bah.
You'd be going into withdrawals. So,
but there it goes. Yeah. I think that is a great option though, for cyclists doing their tours.
For sure.
Especially like in Tim's case, he had to be in DC at a certain time.
Yeah.
And riding back was not going to work for him. Flying it back was going to be too expensive.
Right. And the airlines are just, they're kind of like
you said.
Yeah.
Extortionists.
They're assholes is what they are. They're the worst.
The very worst. The very worst.
They're worse than the people that club seals. Okay, maybe not that bad. I mean, it's like they're metaphorically. Anyways. Yes.
You know, I actually know someone who might
Who club
actually,
seals?
No.
Dave. Oh, okay.
Okay.
But Dave. Someone might actually be, well, they're just as bad as the airlines. The ferry operators.
Oh, yeah? Are they terrible?
Look at this face.
Only one of them. Some of them are really awesome, but
the
Victoria Clipper
that goes
from Seattle to Victoria.
Oh, and they're in business for themselves. Okay. They're not like publicly funded or whatever, so they can
totally. They can do whatever they want, but We took on a pair of Bromptons.
Folding bikes.
They charged us $50 each way.
Mother of God.
Bike.
What the fuck?
Per bike.
Okay, so...
Fuck those guys.
Okay, you heard it. Straight from the horse's mouth. That's one line I won't be going on anymore.
You can take it if you don't have a bike. It's very pleasant.
No, I can't afford it. That's
no, actually, they try to sell you tchotchkes and souvenirs over the intercom the whole time.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, bring your earplugs.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'll be taking Washington State Ferries.
Although, I think that's a good plan. Do that.
Although they do sell duty-free booze.
Well, you can't argue with duty-free booze. I don't like any duty in my booze, that's for sure.
I was wondering if you're going to take it there, and you did.
As you know.
He just held it right out there for you to take.
Scatological. just to wrap up, Tim had the story ends with him getting his bike back safe and sound. Even though it was insured for the actual value of the bike, he never had to take out that insurance because it showed up perfectly. So,
congratulations,
yeah.
Tim.
So this is good news, yeah. And again, this is actually what I used when I went to San Diego, when Adele and I were there.
Oh, yeah.
Because we were going to the East Coast. We didn't take our bikes with us. We had them shipped back to our friends in Portland who picked them up for us. And it worked out pretty well. So, yeah, I recommend this highly. Well, you know what else we got?
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
I'm glad you didn't wait for some kind of witty retort of mine because I did not have one loaded.
Okay. You got to load them up first.
First up, Patreon switches for our donations, including new donor Richard, Tim from Pedal Shift. Thank you, Tim. And orange and purple.
Yeah, purple and orange.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we just we started using Patreon, which is, I think, a superior service for collecting donations. You can give in any denomination. I think it's either $1 or $2 is the baseline limit that you can start at. And you can go as high as you want. You could give us $100 every week if you wanted to.
if you wanted to.
We don't expect you to. we're not going to complain if you do, but we don't expect you to. But the great thing is a lot of these folks are in at, you know, at $2 a month or something like that. At $5, I think we said we're going to call people. We haven't done that yet, but we will. And and at $20, we're going to send you a little Portlandy care package. So,
with cardamom.
Yes, with cardamom. So thank you all who have done that. And we really appreciate it. So anyways, Patreon, that's good news. You guys are the best.
Yeah, thank you. Next, well, we covered this already, but
oh, right,
Richard
yeah.
sent us the full lane, or bikes allowed to use full lane pins. And, yeah, we wore them as tie tacks.
Yes. See beginning of show.
next up, from my Uncle Lou down in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm going to have to... So this was a pretty long email. I'll just cover, like, a little bit.
Give us a redaction.
Yeah. A couple of years ago, I was having problems with flat tires on my old Schwinn. I had 3 or 4 of them over a period of months. Flats weren't happening while I was riding. But were discovered when I went to pick up my bike out of the shed. He goes on to explain that he's getting a lot of flats.
Seemingly from nowhere.
Yeah, seemingly not. Yeah, it wasn't while he was riding.
Yeah.
He puts his bike away, comes back. Hey, my tires are flat.
Are there tacks in the shed?
That's a good question.
We didn't
ask. I
didn't
think of that. No, I didn't
ask. I assume not. Otherwise, he would have mentioned it.
He was wondering if perhaps because Jacksonville is a friggin' oven.
Super hot. Yeah.
That perhaps maybe that had something to do with it. He also goes on to write that his wife also is having the same problem with her new bike. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe there are tacks.
Look for tacks. That's number one. Or nails.
Dave wants to weigh in. Dave is a former bike mechanic.
I can see this. And that's why I've posted this email is.
Hang on. Let me play the special sounder. That's the bike mechanic.
Yeah. I'm not the only one embarrassing myself.
What do we have?
So. In my professional experience, the most common cause of really slow leaks that you can't find very easily, even with you like take out the tube and submerge it in water, mm-hmm. are from very, very shallow pinch flats.
Ooh.
that if you run your tire with too little pressure and you hit a big enough bump that it compresses the tire all the way to the rim, it can punch two holes in the tire.
It's like a cookie cutter.
Yeah. The problem with those is that if you do it just a little bit, it can just make the rubber thin enough that unless you inflate it really, really big, it won't even bubble underwater. It can and everybody what gets like a little bucket and they put it in, but you need to get like the bathtub.
Yeah.
Or you just replace the tube, make sure your rim strip is covering all the spoke heads, and then just go with it. And if you have another flat after that, it's something else. But
okay,
it might be the tube with a really, really hidden hole.
So check your tire pressure, Uncle Lou.
Okay, and don't go out. What I'm hearing is don't go out with underinflated tires.
Don't go out with underinflated tires.
Unless you have a fat bike. In that case, underinflate them for fun.
You can still underinflate and pinch flat those, and the rims are really expensive, so I don't recommend it.
Oh, yeah.
True enough. Okay, there we go. All right. Well, I'm glad we had this. Ask the bike mechanic.
This will be a new section.
We'll excerpt this.
And next up, Jim from New York. I'm a returning cyclist, which is my draw in finding you. Oh, thanks for finding us. I returned from a 40-year hiatus after losing my confidence following a faceplant bike crash when I was 18.
That sounds...
Mother of God.
That sounds rough.
When my kids were in their early years, I began to occasionally ride and gain some steam from the last couple of years. My daughter is type 1 diabetic, and each year we do a walk event for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International. Last year, I discovered JDRF had a ride series. This year, I decided it was time. Registered for the Tucson, Arizona Ride to Cure Diabetes event, November 22nd, and got the training gun? With a local group of JDRFers, lovingly called the Crankies, and have been loving the bike.
Which is good news. I think I've been emailing Jim back and forth a couple times, and he said he had a recent crash as well, like in the past month or so, I want to say. But he's doing okay. I think he's faster back into the saddle than from 18 to whenever. So yes. So congratulations, Jim.
The Crankies is a great name for a riding group.
Yes.
And just remember that everyone crashes, but not everyone really rides.
Right.
Is that like Braveheart, the bicycle version?
Absolutely.
Why do we fall down, Bruce? So we can get back up again.
Free wheels!
I was wondering, what else can we fit in there?
Movie references.
They could take our bike lanes. Yada, yada, yada. I'm not even going to finish that.
But bicycles are entitled to take the full lane.
Yeah, they are. True. Yeah, in many places. So know your rights. Also know your rights if you're not, like, for example, Washington State. You don't get the full lane legally. You have to ride as far to the right as practicable, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
Sometimes that means the full lane.
That's right.
That means the middle of the lane for me.
That's what it means to me.
But tell that to the judge.
All you haters lick my chain rings.
Haters gotta be hating.
That's right.
Next up, Johnny K. In reference to 2 weeks ago.
Oh yes, flat routing with
flat
Kath Ewell.
Flat route your laundry.
Flat route your laundry.
That's
flat
right.
Flat route your laundry. In reference to that, Johnny K. writes, "Everywhere I go is a flat route here in Florida."
True enough.
I don't understand all the kickstand hate. I love my Plesher double-legged kickstand. Every time I have a flat, I don't have to strip my bike and throw it on the ground. Just take the wheel off. Why change a wheel in the dirt like a savage?
Do we have... Were these gestures of agreement?
We like our kickstands.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A bike without a kickstand is a toy. And that's fine.
Oh.
I love bikes that are toys. I have a few.
I have a philosophical stance against a kickstand.
You're incorrect.
Have you ever worked for Surly?
I've not. But
okay. Have you ever read their fine print about kickstands?
I've read something about
specifically
kickstands.
Say that their bikes are not designed
not meant for
kickstands.
Correct.
Right. So, like, don't put one on there?
Don't put one on there. You're going to crack the chainstays because we care more about making lightweight bikes than making bikes that are actual tools.
Okay.
I run
so
a custom-made $300 kickstand on my cargo bike.
That's pretty good.
I'm not even messing around. Wow. Kickstands are
That's a hell of a kickstand.
It really is.
That also kind of like bunch that bumps me in the direction of the Soma Saga for my next bike.
Yeah, because
that's the one that has the kickstand plate
on it.
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot of people
Soma
have been weighing in.
Bikes.
Yeah. All right. There we go.
I saw a Soma copy of a Belinky front loader cargo bike today.
Really?
Yeah, the one where it's like not a full box bike, but it's right. like a cycle truck with the linkage steering out front.
Okay.
It was sick. It was awesome.
That's
totally
awesome.
I rode past it, totally thought it was a Belinky, and then we stopped at the stoplight. I talked to him. He's like, oh, yeah, this is Soma. It's like, that is amazing.
So Soma is doing good work in the world.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Lastly, David in North Carolina. Love the show. Goes great with loading boxes at UPS. Keep riding. Portland sounds like bike utopia compared to North Carolina.
It might be. Maybe.
We still got a long ways to go.
Everyone
maybe
has a long
comparison,
ways to go.
Maybe in comparison we're bike utopia, but
well,
we still got some ways to go.
David in North Carolina, if you ever get out here, say hello. If I ever go to Asheville, I don't know how far you are from Asheville, but I'll be there at some point in the future. So
that's right. You got family out there.
Yes. Right? Yeah. My sister-in-law and brother-in-law. What, your sister-in-law's husband, is that your brother-in-law?
Sure, why
That's
not?
That's what we refer to each other as, just because it's easier than trying to explain the connection. How do you guys know each other?
Yeah. Still your brother-in-law. Yeah. I think that's reasonable.
So. Right.
Or possibly just cousin for everybody.
Right. Yes.
Person to whom I am vaguely related. This is my cousin,
This
Ted.
Is my cousin. How's it going? All right. Well, this is a good time to close out. Is there anything before we keep talking about relatives? Because that's going to get really old.
My doula wants me to tell everyone that I rode my bike in labor.
Oh, that's.
Oh, yeah. We got it. Yes. Both times?
No, just
okay,
once.
Okay, just the once. Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
Summer labor, not winter labor.
You wrote a short story about that, yeah?
I did.
Oh, sorry. That was noise.
I was just affirming.
Yeah.
Raggart.
Make it happen. All right. All you out there.
I got to get the script card.
Everybody go out and have a kid on a bike. That's what
yeah.
we're saying. We're not saying that. Don't do that.
Be fruitful and multiply.
You just squeeze them out, throw them on your back, keep riding.
If you do that, it's not. We didn't tell you to do it. That's on you.
Hey, we can make as many calls to action as we want now.
I suppose you're right.
Definitely want to hear
about
it.
Wait, I'm not ready yet. No, really, I'm
you're
still
really not
looking
ready.
For that.
Oh, okay. Well, so what were you saying, David?
Oh, but you guys definitely want to hear about it if anybody does.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, I bet somebody could totally have a baby in a Dutch tub that was delivered by bicycle.
Oh, my God.
No problem.
I like this.
Yeah, that'd be
I
great.
Like this idea.
Emily Finch, aging.
She's really excited about having more kids, right?
This is not for me to say.
I
but
said
I will
nothing.
Love all of them.
Yes, of course. All right. Are we set to go?
I'm ready now.
Time to get out of here.
Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and guests. Write to us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call and leave us a message or text to us at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at sprocketpodcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Thanks to Herbert for our headline sounder. And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Shadowfoot, Katharina Mellengard, Roger Grigsby, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, Cameron Lane, and Richard Wazinski. And the other three that we mentioned earlier in the show.
Boom. Much out in post, so don't worry about it.
Just the profanity and the offensive stuff, right?
Nope.
Yeah, we take out all the stuff that anybody would cringe at.
Yeah, now that we're not on X-ray anymore, really? we don't edit out the swears.
Yay! Yeah.
Oh, you were on what?
We were on X-ray radio for about 6 months.
Yeah.
And they didn't want any swearing?
Oh, no. I mean, it's FCC rules.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Real radio.
Yeah, like terrestrial radio.
Like terrestrial broadcast?
Or yeah, 91.1.
Which is cool, but...
It was a lot of work.
It was kind of cool. I think what we realized was that...
It was a good experience, I think, but...
Yeah, but we don't want to make radio, I guess. Like the podcast format is similar to it, but it's not.
Certainly not the same.
Not the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you make radio differently. Like radio is more. I don't know. It's like more amped up or whatever. Like you have this higher expectations.
You have to grab the listener.
It has to be good. You have to have driveway moments.
It has to be good. We can suck here.
Well, there's a lot more concentration on like having a sound bite.
Because like nobody
every
to
few
you.
Minutes.
This way people subscribe to you. Well, you're a push.
Yeah.
It just comes.
Well, and in general here, most people are not actually listening to you while they're driving. So
what's a driveway moment?
What is a driveway moment for a cyclist, for somebody who's...
I miss driveway moments. They're one of the things I actually really miss.
Oh.
I do.
I think we should talk about this.
We can talk about
the show.
Moments.
Yes.
Definitely. When I was...
For us, it was garage moments. So it was sit in the garage.
Oh,
the
right.
Yeah,
right.
Because it was fucking snowing.
Because it was fucking snowing.
We were talking about the idea of... driveway moments plus car to go. Like if you had a little button on the screen that you could be like, oh, I'm having a driveway moment, you push that and then the charge for however long you're sitting there goes directly to
NPR. We were talking about that.
Were
that's brilliant. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea. And then it tweets it too.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It needs to be an automatic Twitter.
Yeah.
Automatic tweeting machine.
I'm having a driveway moment in my car to go.
I'm having a driveway moment right now. And the crazy thing is, no one can tell. A Sprocket Studios production.